This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And the 2-2 hit sharply right at Torkelson. And the Tigers hold on and win this one 3-1 as the Astros leave the bases loaded and all of Motown can exhale. Oh, what a game. And the Tigers lead this best of 3-1-0.
I'd say I feel like this team's been fighting elimination all year. We were 10 games back, so we know how to play with our back against the wall. You flush today, come back tomorrow, ready to go, ready to compete, and leave it all out in the field.
It's a fair point by Alex Bregman. They have been fighting elimination in a way most of the year. I mean, September they had a pretty comfortable lead. It's a fair point. It's a good prism to look at it through. Now, you had months and months to come back from 10 games. You got 9 innings today.
That's true. There was a much larger window of time, Sean.
9 innings today to save the season. And that was the final out yesterday. Frustrating ending to the game yesterday. That was Jason Hayward who hit that line drive that Michael Kay on the call there on ABC yesterday. So we welcome you in. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on, we'll call it a reaction Wednesday, because there's a lot to react to from this game. There's a lot to set up for today. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. I used Alex Bregman's words of inspiration. He's been fighting gremlins himself.
He has.
This whole, you know, a lot of people have been done in by the gremlins in their elbow, but
not Breggy.
Breggy's out there. So is Scooble. Scooble was out there too.
Yeah.
It's 5 pitches to take down Jose Altuve, Kyle Tucker, and Yordan Alvarez right at the beginning of the game. And yeah, you're like, well, okay, this is what it's going to be like, maybe.
Yeah.
They waited a little while to knock Scooble around. The last time
they got some guys. The last time the Astros faced him.
So obviously, Scooble had a vintage Scooble day. Probably why he's one of the very best pitchers in baseball.
Yep.
And Framber had what has turned into his normal playoff appearance these days. Yeah. He's just been. Were we whistling past the graveyard on Framber? Just assume, like, oh, yeah, that was just a glitch last year. He'll be fine.
No. A little bit, because I after Framber got knocked out. The Astros lose 3-1 yesterday, by the way. I think most everybody knows that. Framber gave up 3 runs in the second inning, and that was it. That was all Detroit needed. And it wasn't a cheap 3 runs either.
Right.
Give Detroit credit. They worked. You know, they got on base any way they could. They worked Framber. I thought the 4-pitch walk he gave up to the second hitter in their lineup in the first inning was the canary in the coal mine a little bit. Gets an easy first out. Then he's nowhere near the plate on the 4 pitches to the second batter. And I'm like, okay. This is going to be one of those traffic-y Framber days, and it was. They drove in. They got 3 2-out RBIs, all sharply hit balls. Detroit earned this win yesterday. But, yeah, after Framber got knocked out in the fifth, I'm going, okay, this feels very familiar. And so I went to his game log, and I'll just go back to the 2021 postseason. He pitched 4 games in the 2020 postseason. I'm not the COVID year, I'm just putting aside. So, and maybe this fits my narrative a little bit better too, because he was actually decent in 2020. But since the 2021 postseason, Framber Valdez has now started 13 games. Only 5 of those games has he gone more than 5 innings.
Yeah.
Only 5 of them. Now, keep in mind, this guy was the quality start machine in 2022. So it's appropriate that 4 of those 5 came in the postseason in 2022, and the Astros went on to win their second World Series. But this is the guy that's treated like your ace right now.
Yeah.
And a vast majority of that. And by the way, when I say he hasn't gotten past 5 innings, there are several clunkers in there. I mean, last season was one of them. Like, you know, 12 innings, 13 runs given up. There were some clunkers back in 2021. So this has not been a guy in the postseason who you hand the ball to and go, all right, you know, wild card round, this is half of what we need to get done in this series. Here you go, Fromber, get it done.
I think there's something to it when we know it's not speculation or anything, that he struggles with things emotionally sometimes.
Yes.
And this seems to be clearly one of those times.
Yeah.
He's didn't have the control yesterday early on, and it hurt him. And I, you know, if they had come out with a victory on this, I'd say thank goodness that Blanco exists. And
we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we were talking about
at some point, when is Blanco going to perhaps come in as a piggyback guy? We didn't have to wait long.
Yeah, we said yesterday he's going to come in at some point in this postseason, and he's going to have to give you two or three really important innings. That day came yesterday.
Yes,
because Fromber couldn't keep it together. So, and credit the whole bullpen. I mean, they brought in a bunch of guys. No idea why they used Josh Hader in the ninth inning of that
especially
game.
Especially when, and you're wondering, okay, well, who are they using the ninth, and blah, blah, blah. And then they flash up that graphic that since 1990, teams are 1-538 when entering the ninth inning with a 3-plus run deficit.
Yeah.
So
could you believe that when you saw that?
No, I'm all
that's
no,
bananas.
It doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem possible.
One time in 3-plus decades, has a team in the postseason come back from down
three-plus
runs? It might be. Boy, ESPN or ABC with their graphics yesterday were terrible.
Okay,
they were putting up they put up at the bottom of the screen the OPS batting average and number of home runs for each guy.
Yeah,
and there was a point in the game where they're posting them for Astro players. I'm like, that's just wrong. They had like Yordan's OPS this year as like 709 with a 254 average and 9 home runs, and I'm pausing it and looking at it. I'm like, that's not right.
Okay, good. So that stat couldn't have been possibly right.
Well,
that,
no. It could be.
I don't know, man. That's crazy. Like a three-run deficit.
Botching Yordan's stats in a five-second throwaway is different than botching a major stat like that.
If they botch Yordan's stats for like what should be the easiest stat to put up there, I'm guessing
that
the crazy weird one was probably messed up too.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that aside.
Yeah.
One of our listeners, I'm sure, will correct us on it. Leaving that aside, I was surprised they used Hader. And it doesn't mean you're giving up or whatever if you don't use Hader. Oh. There's other relievers that are going to come in pivotal moments in this series. Yeah. It's just that, man, it seemed like an oddly aggressive move. And not futile necessarily. Obviously, the Astros were in a position to win that game. But,
and he pitched a clean inning.
Yeah,
I mean,
he pitched it right. So I don't know. If they win that game, though, that's the test. All right, if the Astros win that game, are you still kind of curious about the decision to use Hader?
Yeah, but it's looked at differently. You know, if they went good job, Espada, making sure that you stayed within striking distance.
Yeah, all right. The fact that they were in position to win that game, I have to give them a pass on.
There were two decisions late in the game that caught at least a lot of question marks. One was Josh Hader coming in and pitching the ninth inning. In a game where you're down three runs and in a series where it's looking like it's 99.9% certain that you're going to need to play on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
So unless you boat race the Tigers in one or two of these games, you're going to need Josh Hader to come in and close things down in potentially today and hopefully tomorrow. The other decision was when they had runners on first and second with nobody out in the ninth inning. And they had Jeremy Pena bunt.
Yeah,
I saw some people saying, "Oh man, you know, swing the bat, try to keep the inning going." It was 3-1 at that point. I had no problem with that. Pena looked awful at the plate yesterday.
He looked awful at the plate, and then he laid down a beautiful bunt. And
the worst case scenario there, if he lays down a good bunt, is you've got second and third with one out, and there's a good chance Pena, even with them looking for the bunt, there's a chance Pena could beat it out.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a chance you get an errant throw.
Yeah.
Rolls down the right field line. Now the game's tied.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I was okay with that.
I was too.
I actually kind of get excited when I realized he was going to bunt.
You like bunts better than I do.
I do. I'm not like Joe Old School, want everybody to bunt all the time, but I do enjoy it. But I also like the Pena doing it because of that dynamic that he's... It's not like Yiner putting down a bunt or something.
Right.
He's got a chance to get on base.
Yeah, it could have been bases loaded, nobody out. Here's Joe Espada on the decision to have Pena bunt there.
Yes, you know, just trying to give our guys two shots to to give us the lead. They always Caratini, McCormick, and potentially Hayward. And, you know, Caratini's gotten some big hits for us from the left side and also from the right side, but especially from the left side. You know, hit that ball pretty hard there to left. And then after that, McCormick reaches first, and then we are one swing away. I just want to give our team an opportunity there, second and third. We want out an opportunity just to get multiple runs there, try to keep us in the game.
Yeah, I thought Espada managed that inning really well. They lose the game, so ultimately it didn't work because the score is the score. But I thought Caratini's ball was going to drop. It had an expected batting average of over 600.
Yeah.
Jason Hayward hits a rocket shot to first base. I didn't have a big, like, oh, the God, because that had an expected, surprisingly, that had a lesser expected batting average than Caratini's looper he hit to left field.
Yeah.
Still, it was 570, the expected batting average on that line drive Hayward hit that we just heard Michael Kay call to end the game there. I didn't have a big, like, baseball gods are against this thing because Yiner's base hit and Bregman's base hits were total dribblers.
Little bloops. Those
in
are
that,
kind
and,
of
like
those.
Rolling through the vacant infield.
Yeah.
You know?
Those are the ones Bagwell would tell you are the ones that win you games. And they almost did
they
yesterday.
Almost did,
right. Yeah.
Yep.
I didn't realize it was a 570 expected batting
average. Jason Hayward's line drive was 570.
I was watching up here, and immediately after that game, I was like, all right, I'm leaving. And it was an exodus out of the building. The elevator ride took down immediately.
Oh, out of this, out of
yeah.
our building here,
yeah,
24 Greenway,
it was at like 4:30 or so or whatever. And I'm like, so man, what time do people usually leave work? Because all of a sudden at 4:30, we were stopping on every floor, just all these people getting in with angry or confused.
Everybody's
looks
watching
on their
the
faces.
Game
yeah,
in the building.
Yeah.
Here. That's funny. That's funny. How are we feeling about today?
I feel good. I'm ready for Hunter Brown.
I'm ready too.
For Hunter Brown.
Yeah.
And Hunter Brown is ready for this. You're going to get a bullpen day out of the Tigers. They're going to start with an opener, and then it's going to be a steady parade of guys that you're vaguely familiar with. And it's Hunter Brown versus the world.
Yep.
Hunter Brown versus everything the Tigers can throw at them.
Hunter Brown versus his home state.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hope he hates that state.
Today.
Yes.
Yeah, today I hope he does for
Michigan.
Sure. Yeah. It's actually really pretty up there. I mean, other than certain parts of Detroit, it's actually very nice up there.
Well,
very
it's pleasant. Never mind. I was going to make an inappropriate comment that somebody would think was political or something.
Okay,
and then
yeah.
I just got to, yeah.
Stay, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch the debate last
Censoring
night?
Myself.
Yeah.
Censoring myself.
Good job, Seth. Good job. The Astros lose 3-1. They are, we heard Bregman talk about it coming in. About, you know, we've been in it basically the whole year's been an elimination game. They are 7-5 in elimination games since 2017. Now, three of those wins.
What about when they're at home?
I don't want to look.
It is. I hate living in a world where Astros fans are universally like, well, yeah, they were at home.
Yeah.
Of course they blew it yesterday.
Of course they
missed the opportunity. You want to talk about baseball gods or razor thin margins or anything else like that?
Yeah.
It was just that, that Parker Meadows just beating out Pena's relay to first. In the second inning.
They could have gotten out of the inning.
That ended up being that could have been a critical.
That was the gateway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They got all their RBIs after that. It's the little thing. Tigers did the little things better yesterday. And man, was that a boring game from about the third inning through the eighth inning?
It was excruciating. It was so.
I fell asleep twice.
Oh man, I'm like, do I try to pay my bills right? No, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to focus.
Focus.
Boy, I think I could pay my bills at the same time.
Focus.
No, Seth, you don't have that ability to multitask at all.
Focus. All right, we'll circle back to the Astros. But this suffice it to say, this is a big one today. Hunter Brown trying to save the season. 132 first pitch. What's been the biggest surprise? I got asked this question on the Hutopia mailbag yesterday. What's been the biggest surprise 4 weeks in for our 3-1 Houston Texans? I've got a few candidates here, and I'll see if Seth wants to throw a couple logs on the fire on this one. We will get to that coming up next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Astros lose yesterday 3-1. We'll get to that in headlines coming up next. Big one today, 1:30 out at Minute Maid Park. What's been the biggest surprise 4 weeks in with the Houston Texans? I think this is a fairly easy answer, but I'm curious what you think the biggest surprise is so far for you.
Honestly, it's not the most glaring, except it has been in a couple of these games. For me, it's actually the special teams issues.
Really?
Yeah, the fact that
that's on my list,
you've
but
had
it wasn't
two
number
big
one.
Gaffes
yeah.
that have made a couple games closer than they needed to be.
Yes.
You had the blocked punt with the Colts. You had Steven Sims' muffed punt. And then I think I'm missing one in there somewhere along the way, too. So and who knows? I mean, Steven Sims.
Those are the big ones.
Steven Sims is an individual error. Well, remember, Des King had a muffed punt in the preseason.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they were
trying to make the team.
but there are still one. He's on the practice squad right now.
Yeah.
I remember that the other day. I was like, well, elevate Des King and have him. At least he'll catch. And then I remember that he muffed one in the preseason.
Yeah.
So, that's probably been the biggest surprise, given that so much of the conversation was about the new kickoff rules. And a lot of people have wondered, a lot of our listeners have brought this up, like maybe they just spent so much time working on that that some of the details fell by the wayside others. Beyond that, though, yeah, it's the penalties.
Yeah.
It's the way that the offensive line is underperformed in, like, not the traditional ways, but in the boneheaded ways.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that. I was very keenly alert to, okay, how's Drew Scruggs going to be? How's Kenyon Green going to be? And that's been a mixed bag, but the penalties are by far the most glaring thing. And they're just, and it's, as D'Amico pointed out on his coach's show, it's not your run-of-the-mill, oh, a hold here, defensively, an interference here or whatever. They're just boneheaded, avoidable errors.
Yeah, this was D'Amico. My answer would be the penalties for sure. Like, there's just the shocking rate of the penalties. You know, they like that there's so many. And that by the time they had a 12-penalty game and an 11-penalty game, I'm at the point now where I expect double-digit penalties in every game, despite what D'Amico says during the week. I don't believe, until I see otherwise, I don't believe that these things are getting corrected.
Right.
You
well,
know, like,
okay, so now this is the thing. We call them boneheaded penalties, but as I think Nick pointed out on the GM show, that, you know, at times it is, he's not just sticking up for the offensive linemen, and it's always ultimately the offensive line's fault, but the process pre-snap has been a bit clunky, and that includes the center, but also C.J. Stroud at times. And just when the rhythm and the timing of the offense gets screwed up pre-snap, mayhem ensues. So that's the part, I think, where it does come back to Bobby Slowick. It comes back to Chris Strausser. It comes back to the entire offensive line, obviously. But, yeah, the clunkiness of that operation, when all we heard during training camp was, oh, we're able to work on next-level stuff now.
Yeah.
Oh, we got the basics nailed down. Now it's all about the extras. And I'd also say, I mean, should Bobby Slowick have been surprised that they're seeing so much cover two shell? Because he flat out said he was surprised by it. I feel like this is something they could have anticipated.
Yeah.
So how is it that this was such a surprise that when you've got really good wide receivers,
three dynamic wide receivers,
and you never just demonstrated an ability to run last year, that, oh wow, they're doing everything they can to take away those three top receivers.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Yeah.
Here was D'Amico on Sunday. This was right after the game on Sunday, talking about the mental penalties.
The penalties that bug me the most, and we have to get off of our tape and off of our team, is the mental penalties. That's the ones I can't stand, and I can't go for it. Like, we have to play smart. If we want to be a good football team, you have to play the game smart. And we talk about, you know, we look at other teams around the league, and we have meetings on these things, and guys just have to own up to it and be man enough to stand up and just play the game the right way. A lot of them just, you know, just bonehead penalties that are
you know, it's uncalled for, right? You don't need those. They're not helping us at all. When we still, we had positive things that happened to us, and we're going backwards. We're in field goal range, and we go backwards because of our own mistakes. So, again, for the seem like I'm a broken record every time I stand up here, the Texans have to get out of the Texans' way for us to be a good team.
The broken record part is frustrating. I was doing my podcast yesterday, Seth, the mailbag, and by like the fourth Laramie Tunsil question, I'm like, I don't feel like talking about this anymore.
Right.
I just
right.
stopped and I said, I've got, you know, 20 emails here that I picked out from the mailbag, and individually I read each of them like, oh, that's a good one, and that's a good one, and that's a good one. And so there ends up being a lot of emails about penalties because it's a big topic. By like the fourth one, I'm like, penalties are a taboo topic. We are a penalty-free talk zone now.
There's nothing else you can say, and it's not that you're ignoring it or anything. It's that it's one of the most frustrating and infuriating things. And then people ask, well, what can you do to fix it? Honestly, a lot of it does just come back to simply coaching the basics. And this is how it always goes with offensive line. I remember with the Texans one year, we had an epidemic of false starting on the offensive line. And I talked to one of the offensive coaches about it because I was getting frustrated as a defensive lineman. These guys are they're false starting in practice, and then you got to do the rep. The period takes longer. I want to get inside and go to the cold tub.
Yeah.
And practice is going to be like 20 minutes too long because you guys suck so bad. Yeah. And it's always that balance. Oh, it was Chris Palmer. I ended up talking to the offensive coordinator about it. I was basically like, Chris, what the hell? Get this crap together. And, he's like, you're in that constant battle of, all right, what, do we just go on one every time? Because then you give these crappy offensive linemen a chance for the defensive linemen to tee off on them.
Yep.
Once the D-line knows that you're going on one every time because you can't stay in your stance, it gets ugly. So, but usually it's always the balance between simplicity in complexity, and that when you're trying to do that, you can execute really, really well when you're doing just simple stuff and with a limited playbook, but then the defense figures you out. So how do you find that balance? And they have not found that balance right now, obviously.
Nope. Text in if you've got an answer. We're going, what's the biggest surprise 4 weeks in with the Houston Texans? 3-1, so that's good. They're leading the division. That's good. They're the 2 seed in the AFC right now. If the playoffs began today, they would be guaranteed 2 home playoff games. They've never been in that spot before. But it's 4 games in. Biggest surprise. So the penalties we hit. Number 2 on my list was a special teams failure. So you nailed that. Block punt and muffed punt. Those are literally only 2 mistakes. But they are mistakes that kept 2 games. It put you in peril in 2 games.
Right.
You know, and so those are huge. And they just didn't do those before. You know, they had it buttoned down. I think one for me, it's kind of below the radar, but it happened in the last game, and I want to say it happened maybe in the Indianapolis game too. Some strange clock management at the end of the half for D'Amico. I thought that the end of game drive, the drive that CJ engineered to win the game against Jacksonville, might have been some of D'Amico's finest moments as a game manager since he became head coach of this team. Mm-hmm. I thought it was outstanding. The way they got quickly into the red zone. Once they were there and there's a minute and change left, they had some extra plays they could use to empty the satchel of timeouts that Jacksonville had. So now they know that, hey man, worst case, we're kicking a field goal going to overtime and they're not going to have any timeouts left. I thought D'Amico managed that really well. They end up scoring a touchdown and winning the game, which made it even better. The end of the half stuff, it's happened in a couple of games at least this year where he's gotten super conservative.
Yeah.
And in this particular game, he waited till there were 27 seconds left to even start using timeouts. And they left the field. And granted, they kicked a field goal, so they came away with points. But you walked off the field on second down deep in Jacksonville territory with a timeout still on the board.
Right.
So you mismanaged that. By definition, you mismanaged that,
The biggest thing with that is, and I don't think there's an overall philosophy, I think, that you see out of Kyle Shanahan coaches of, I think, basically playing for a field goal at the end of the half.
And maybe getting the ball to start the second half.
It does two things. Is that you are, it's more achievable on average to go to plan for kicking a field goal. Like it's a lot easier to get down to the 35 or 45 yard line, wherever it is, than it is to actually punch it in.
Yeah.
The other thing is that then you take away the possession. Like, they're playing to take away a possession from the other side.
They don't want to get the ball.
If they were going to be really aggressive and try to get a touchdown, there's more chance that you're going to turn over on downs and then they get another chance. You think about, there's about 12 possessions in an average NFL game for an offense. So you're taking away 8.3% of their potential possessions when you take away a possession. And I think that's the... D'Amico's going to get labeled as, well, classic defensive coach playing conservatively. I think it's more of an analytical approach, and it's going to be frustrating. But in close games, especially where you're not trying to overcome a huge deficit,
yeah.
I think that's what we're going to see out of D'Amico as long as he's the head coach.
Yeah, they had, it was first and 20 at the Houston 46 with 53 seconds left, and they get a play to dig. I don't want to go through the whole play-by-play. Yeah. They didn't use their first timeout until there was 27 seconds left in the half.
Yeah.
And they're at the Jacksonville 34.
Yeah.
So, I'm not about that. Like, I wish they... I mean, you got C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs. Like, you can attack. That's... Your explanation is a fair one. I just don't like... I don't like that philosophy. Yeah. I'm philosophically opposed to
it. As far as the penalties go, this is the one thing. To just add a little context to it with Laremy Tunsil, and this is why people want to talk about it so much. I know you know this, but I remember Meltzer tweeting... Meltzer's doing that thing where he's like, what did everybody expect? This is who Laremy Tunsil is. No, it's not. He's committing penalties at four times his normal rate.
Right.
I mean, he's on pace for over 44 penalties right now.
That's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, it is really... like, last year, he had 11 total penalties.
Total
penalties. So, he's committing
not
penalties.
11 false starts. Right, just 11 total penalties.
Yeah. Juwan Taylor led the league with 20.
Right.
So, even by Juwan Taylor's standards of last year, Laremy is twice his pace.
Yeah.
So, that's why it's... No, Laremy has not always been like this. This is four times worse than Laremy, who was already one of the worst guys in the league. I guess one of the best guys at collecting penalties.
Nobody's been like this.
He's been prolific.
Nobody's been like this.
Nobody, right. And so for him to extend it, and he didn't have any false starts, but he still had two.
Right.
Which is on... If it was just last week, he was on pace for 34 in a season.
That's
it's
right.
Just, it's been really, really, really bad.
I think the last thing I had on my list here of surprises, and again, text in... And this kind of plays into my last one here. Text message. The biggest mind-blowing surprise with our Texans is they don't seem to know who they are or what they want to do. Feels like, let's see if we can win this any way possible. And I think some of that may have to do with the offense not really having an identity so far. You know, like they want to run. They can't run. We got all these receivers and everybody's expecting fireworks. Where are the fireworks? Other than Nico Collins, right. Where are the fireworks? Well, and so the heat that Bobby Slowik is getting right now was not expected.
Well,
coming into the season.
Except that the big question was still going to be, can they engineer a run game? And because if they want to run this offense the way that they foresee it, it includes running the ball. And I think right now you can tell, okay, Cam Akers is a nice little piece to have, but he's certainly not a bell cow. You know, J.J. Taylor might add some flash. It'd be nice if he could catch the ball. Like, all these things, they're kind of nice. At the end of the day, Ogumba Wale, at the very least, allows them to have steady hands as a receiver and a guy that's going to try to bulldoze his way to 4 or 5 yards, which is like, just don't make it a negative of a down.
Yeah.
And it was in a very small sample size at the end of the game. They need Joe Mixon back. As much as, you can talk about running back contracts all you want, there was a reason the 49ers traded for Christian McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a reason they gave him the best running back contract in the league. So Joe Mixon's presence for the rest of the season is going to be a big deal.
It's imperative.
It's just 100% different when Joe Mixon is in there.
Well, they need him this weekend. Today's a big day. I feel like we say this every week, but today is a big injury report day as it pertains to Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they need him. And all the reports on Sunday when he was inactive had been... He's looking good for Buffalo. Mm-hmm. It was good to see him get back out on the practice field last week.
The other thing, too, is, you know, yes, teams are playing a lot of shell, a lot of zone versus them trying to tamp down the... and we had the question yesterday about, at this point, does the Stephon Diggs trade look worth it? Mm-hmm. This is why the Stephon Diggs trade was worth it. Nico's getting a lot of that production because teams are playing zone. If they could focus solely on Nico, he wouldn't be doing what he's doing right now. But yep. Nico, as a big guy that looks like he should be like it's his physical domination that would be his calling card. He's gotten really smart at finding the soft spots.
Very
in the
refined,
coverage.
Yeah.
So that's why opposing fan bases will be like, of course he's just running through these zones. Of course you're going to, right. You're in this bind where you still have to worry about Stephon Diggs, even without Tank Dell on the field. So that, the victory last week alone, I would say, I'm not so sure, you know, it's easy to say I don't think they win that without Nico Collins, but I'm not so sure they win it with Nico Collins, but no Stephon Diggs.
That's a good way to put it. And Tank is something we'll be keeping an eye on today as well. Is Tank Dell back at practice? Text message, somebody expressing that they're surprised how invisible the tight ends have been so far this year.
Yeah, yeah. I think part of that is that they've been, they're using them in pass protection. Like, they're not getting out on routes quickly. And that last drive will be interesting because it wasn't hurry-up mode necessarily, but it felt a little bit more wide open. And if you're going against a team like the Jaguars that don't blitz a lot, you know who else doesn't blitz a lot? The Bills. The Bills do not blitz a lot at all. They play coverage, and they try to be really good at playing coverage. But they don't blitz a lot. That's been this offensive line, when they've just had to line up and block four, they're starting to get a better feel for some of the D-line games and everything. And they did well with that in the Jags game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think versus the Bills, at least, yeah, you might just let CJ cook a little bit more. Now Mixon will be back there, but they might let you know, CJ was empty in empty backfield formations on that last drive
at times.
So yeah, split Joe Mixon out, he becomes a receiving threat, and then you can start hitting some of the quick hitters. As long as teams aren't blitzing and destroying you before even the quick routes can get open.
All right, let's get to headlines. Astros, big day today, man. Season on the line today. We'll get to the Texans. Big news for the Texans' opponent this weekend, the Buffalo Bills, that I think helps out the Houston Texans. And another wide receiver on the market, reportedly. We'll get to all that coming up next in headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
And the 2-2. Sharply, right at Torkelson, and the Tigers hold on and win this one 3-1 as the Astros leave the bases loaded and all of Motown can exhale. Oh, what a game! And the Tigers lead this best of 3-1-0.
All right, that was the final out. Jason Hayward lines out to Torkelson, the first baseman for the Tigers, and that's game over. 3-1, the Tigers win yesterday. So the Astros, and this feels so weird. Like, we're one game into the playoffs, and boom, here's an elimination game.
Right.
I'm not used to this.
At home.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other. We're used to that, to being nervous about the playoffs at home. That's a problem.
Yep.
That, man, so many moments in that game where things could have flipped on their head. Top of the second inning, they make that out at first. And
potential double play
right there. After Pena hits the relay, and instead they end up basically getting what were going to be the winning runs.
Yeah, they drove in three. They had three two-out RBIs.
I mean, Blanco coming in, awesome move, obviously, does exactly what you hope Blanco can do, why he's there in a three-game series, that he can piggyback for somebody that's struggling at the beginning, and that at least was good. It was a boring ass game after that. After the three runs, it got super, super boring until it got really, really interesting in the bottom of the ninth.
Yeah. Here's Alex Bregman after the game saying, we've been playing elimination games all year long.
I'd say I feel like this team's been fighting elimination all year. We were 10 games back, so we know how to play with our back against the wall. You flush today, come back tomorrow. Ready to go, ready to compete, and leave it all out in the field.
Okay, he doesn't sound nervous. He doesn't sound as nervous as I feel.
He never sounds anything.
I know,
like, hey,
I know.
Hey, they just gave you a $2 billion contract. What do you feel about that, Alex? Like, hey, it's
let me get out
nice,
of the cage,
you know,
first, and then I'll tell you. Yeah.
I got a lot of stuff I got to take care of today. I'll reflect on this later.
Astros a -175 favorite today with Hunter Brown on the mound. It means you got to risk 175 to win 100, so nearly a 2-1, nearly a 1-2 favorite.
I feel like Hunter, kind of like Scooball yesterday. You could see he pitches a lot of aggression and emotion, and maybe sometimes you would worry about a younger pitcher, going a little too hard on that side of it. I think Hunter, I 100% trust that the aggression and the anger and all that will push him through any jitters or nervousness about his first playoff start. So I feel very comfortable with him. As many people have pointed out on the text line, I asked the question, were we whistling past the graveyard on Framber and how he's been in the playoffs? I'm guilty of this. I was nervous about it because he's been bad in the playoffs as of late. And yet, I guess there's that part of me that always just wants to feel like, nope, he's fixed up all of that erratic stuff, and that was just flukishness last year. He's been fine. He just had the one scary moment this year where he went off script early in the season. But other than that, he's steady Eddie, and obviously he was not steady Eddie. And it wasn't like an emotional meltdown or anything. He just didn't have control.
Right.
But it's just another, it's erratic pitching in the playoffs.
He's started 13 games in the postseason, Framber has. Only five of them has he lasted longer than five innings. That's, I mean, for the guy that's your ace, for the guy that he's your one that you're trotting out there at the beginning of a playoff series.
Like, what do you do? I mean, it's one of those situations where, all right, by all means,
you're not going to not pitch Framber.
He should be the number one guy based on regular season. And yet, there's that part of you where you're like, oh, gosh, maybe not just because of his playoff experience. But at the same time, I don't want to make it even more tougher on him mentally and put that much more pressure on him by acknowledging the elephant in the room. Yep. I don't know.
I'm surprised we're getting as much feedback from people that are down on them having Pena bunt down 3-1 with no outs, runners on first and second in the game yesterday. For those who don't recall, in the bottom of the ninth, the Astros had driven home. Yiner Diaz drove home that first run. So it's 3-1. You got runners on first and second, nobody out. Jeremy Pena comes up to the plate, and Jeremy Pena had an awful day to that point. He'd struck out. He'd 0-for-3 with three strikeouts, and he looked horrible at the plate. And I'm not a bunt advocate at all. But in that moment, I'm going, when he first squared up the first time and didn't get the bunt down, I'm like, okay, I'm all right with this. Because if he gets the bunt down, then the worst case scenario is you got second and third with one out.
Yeah.
The upside is if Pena is the one guy who I would pick to beat out a bunt on this team, and maybe you get bases loaded, nobody out, maybe you get a bad throw, you know, catcher Rogers picks it up, he rushes the throw. Now the game's tied because you got the balls rolling down the right field line. Someone says on the Pena bunt, hey, who was on deck when that last out was made? That bunt was an out when you had your bottom three coming up. The answer to that question is Altuve was on deck to finish the game. I don't have an issue with how it went. Caratini and Hayward both hit balls that a majority of the time are base hits.
Yeah, they actually, and that's how I was in the moment.
And you're assuming that Pena's not going to get out in this also, by the way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, how can you get up there and say, no, what you need is a RBI double out of it? Well, that would be a two RBI double out of Pena or something. And
you're assuming he's getting a hit.
It's Pena.
Yeah.
And I think at that moment, his greatest asset is that, not only in laying down a good bunt, but the stress he puts on the fielders by his speed.
Yeah.
There's more of a chance of an errant throw or what have you.
That's right.
I did once I realized he was going to bunt, I said to myself, okay, if this doesn't work out, am I okay with it? Yes. Okay. So I can speak with credibility afterwards and say that, all right, I think it was the right decision. Yes, it's easy to say when it worked out, but I was okay with that situation right there.
Yeah.
And kudos to Pena for getting it. And
he executed it perfectly.
Yeah.
Yep. Executed perfectly. All right. So game two today, Hunter Brown on the mound. We'll talk about that more at the top of the hour. The question at the top of the hour, what is at stake today in game two? We know that the season's hanging on the line, but there's some bigger things going on. We'll get to that at the top of the hour. Texans injuries we're keeping an eye on today as they resume practice, getting ready for the Buffalo Bills coming to town this weekend. Joe Mixon, Tank Dell, Damian Pierce. Those are the three big ones we'll have an eye on today when the injury report comes out. Good news yesterday for the Houston Texans and the three other future opponents over the next four games for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
Von Miller suspended four games for violating the personal conduct policy.
Not as big a deal as it would have been 2 years ago. Remember, he had that they signed him to a really lucrative contract at the age of 33. Did very well for them that year. Then the next year, injured. And this year, he's been getting about 20 snaps per game. He's got a couple sacks already.
He had a sack in the Trevor Lawrence, in the Jags game on Monday night.
And he also, he had a sack against the Dolphins when the backup quarterback was in and the backup right tackle was in. He just ran right past him. But it's not nothing. But it's not all of a sudden like, oh, yeah, Von Miller was a linchpin to that defense and now they're shooting. So it's nice. It helps.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like he was playing an outsized role.
No. It's just depth. You know, like it eats at their depth on the end. He's not even one of their three. Rousseau and EJ Epenesa. Yeah. They've been better pass rushers for them.
The one thing the Bills defense does really well, they limit the explosive plays. So the very thing that, you know, D'Amico harps on, we got to get these explosive plays, got to get these explosive plays. Mm. This is exactly the game when you really want Joe Mixon back.
Yeah.
Bills defense is not, they're not going to throw a bunch of crazy blitzes at the Texans, something that's really bothered them so far this season. And if they can just, if the guys up front can block just well enough, I think you're going to get some good drives out of CJ. I feel more and more optimistic about this the more I look at the matchup.
Excited for this game, man. This is going to be fun on Sunday. I mean, this is a big-time opponent coming to town with Buffalo. Devontae Adams is on the market. That is a developing story this morning. The Raiders reportedly have said, we are open to trading Devontae Adams. We'll get into that more in the 7 o'clock hour, about 7:20 or so. Devontae Adams was on Kay Adams' podcast yesterday. Had some interesting things to say about his possible availability, but Antonio Pierce, his head coach, liking Instagram posts that mentioned it could have been his last game as a Raider.
Is the guy? Yeah, we'll
get into all the soap opera, but yeah, so we'll set that up for you in the 7 o'clock hour. All right, what's at stake today in game two? I know the series and the season is at stake, but there's some bigger things here, I think, that are at stake with today's elimination game potentially for the Houston Astros. We'll get to that. If you want to text in and weigh in on that, what's at stake today in game two? We'll talk about that coming up next.